Welcome to the Hey Boomer Podcast, the Facebook Live show that inspires boomers to recognize their own strengths and relevance through thought-provoking conversations with extraordinary guests. My name is Wendy Green, and I am your host of Hey Boomer. Hello, Hey Boomer listeners. How many of you have been through a natural disaster, like a hurricane or tornado, some of the wildfires like they're having out in California now? If you've been through anything like that, please let us know in the chat. We'll be watching for your comments, and Dan is going to give us a lot of information about that, and I will tell you about him later. Dan and I actually knew each other in high school, and then we pretty much lost touch after high school. But both of us have been through hurricanes because we grew up in Miami. And fortunately for us, at least I know for me, we didn't have a lot of damage to our homes. But certainly in areas around us in Miami, there have been a lot of damaging, very damaging hurricanes. And so we're going to talk about what the Red Cross does at, you know, right after a natural disaster, but even more so, how do you handle it now in the time of a pandemic? Let me tell you a little bit about Dan first. Dan Halliburton started as a radio DJ in Miami, Florida. He actually started radio playing in high school. And then he has spent his entire career in broadcast radio. He ran stations in Miami, New York, and Dallas, Texas, where he now lives with his wife. He is a member of the Country Radio and Texas Radio Hall of Fame. And after he left radio, Dan became a volunteer with the American Red Cross as a public affairs spokesperson and videographer. He received the Presidential Award for Excellence, given to a person who has demonstrated exceptional performance or service in support of the American Red Cross. Dan has deployed to major disasters around the U.S., most recently to Louisiana after Hurricane Laura. He was also in California when the Paradise fires happened. So we're gonna hear about some of that. And I'm seeing some answers to the question about natural disasters. We've had people in tornadoes and earthquakes, hurricanes. Before I get bring Dan on, I just want to remind you what we're doing here in Hey Boomer. We are building a community, and we are a community of people that are active and involved and engaged in our community. We want to make a difference. We want to feel relevant. And being part of a community means being part of this conversation. So I have the privilege of talking to these amazing guests that we have each week. And I think that I am very lucky today to have Dan on as a guest. I also want you to be involved in the conversation. So please feel free to comment in the chat box, ask questions, give encouragement, any way that you want to be involved, just be part of the Hey Boomer community. One more thing before I bring Dan on. A lot of us, since COVID shut down in March, and since we have no idea when this is all going to be over, a lot of us are experiencing a lot of anxiety. And I have been thinking about this and working on this because I've experienced it too. You know, we all are. So I have decided to offer a 3-week community gathering. We're going to meet once a week, 3 times, and we're going to share about how to deal with this anxiety, how to find that sense of well-being, how to feel more grounded. I will be sending out information each week to prepare for the conversations, and then we'll Zoom together as a community, help each other, support each other. It's going to be an amazing thing. If you are interested in getting more information about that, you can email me. The email address is heyboomer0413@gmail.com. And I really hope that you will be part of that community gathering. It should be so amazing and so supportive. So let me bring Dan on. Hello, Dan Halliburton.
Hello, Wendy Green. How are you?
I am good. I am so glad to have you on the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be on with you.
And especially glad, Dan, because at one point you were scheduled and then you and Christy came down with COVID.
We did.
And so before we start, first of all, so grateful that you both have recovered, but can you walk us through a little bit what that was like?
Yeah, 1 month of our life disappeared. It was strange because when you first start to show the symptoms, which are for both of us were dry cough, it's not always the case, but dry cough, we got a message and then we knew that Christy, through her work, she's a medical social worker, was likely infected through that process and working with either clients or another staffer. Where, you know, you're never sure, and does it really matter? You know, I mean, it's weird. You're curious to know, but it doesn't really matter how you got it. So the first, when we started showing symptoms, immediately I called my doctor. We did a teledoc visit. They were all over it. They had me come down to take a test immediately, which we got back in just 2.5 days, which was really good. Fast because Christy did one through another resource and it took 13 days. And that doesn't do you any good, right? You already know you're really sick by the 13th day of a test. You don't need a test at that point. So the first day I'm running around, I went and I did my test, which was the brain tickle, as they call it. and then also a chest x-ray. I guess they wanted to get immediately probably a baseline on that. I'm driving around town. I feel fine. It's like there's nothing going on. You know, I feel good. And then about 2 days later, a day and a half, something like that later, then boom, it really hit. And that was a pretty good downhill slide. People ask me a lot of times, well, how would you characterize it? Was it a minor case? Was it moderate? Everybody's so different on it. It was 2 miserable, solid weeks of just awfulness. And the symptoms were different for Christy and I. We both lost our sense of smell and taste, and now is still a little affected. It's strange. I'll get an initial, if I eat something now, it tastes for a while, and then it's like it's like it gets turned off. So, and then somebody asks, well, then do you just quit eating? And it's like, no, unfortunately, I keep eating.
The weight loss program.
The COVID has not been good to my waistline. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean that in a good way, like in a big way. So then it was a good couple of weeks. I would say the difference from flu, and we had a little difference. I had more fever and chills and shivers than she did. She didn't have much fever. We had our pulse ox, so we checked that all the time. I'm an asthmatic. I mean, check all the boxes. I check most of them. So I'm very, very fortunate. But I'm an asthmatic. So on a pulse ox, you know, the little thing they put on your finger to check your oxygen level, I'm never as good as most folks. You know, most people are 99 or 100, and I'm maybe 98 all the time. It's never better than that, maybe 97. So mine dropped down into the high, in the low 90s, 92, but it never got in the 80s. That's a good sign because 80s is bad. Mm-hmm. And it just felt rotten for 2 weeks. And third week started to crawl out of it, had the brain fog challenge that comes around. And then started feeling better. I got to say now, I probably feel better than ever. And I think that's, I've thought a lot about this. I think it's mental. One, I think part of the mental is you've already had it. You've been there. You survived it. There's some other feelings about people who don't survive. There are feelings about friends that I have lost to it, or people who were very, very close to being lost with it. But I don't know. It seems like a renewal. I mean, it's like I got stuff to do. Not that I didn't before. I'm crazy busy all the time. But I don't know. I feel better. Well, I felt better until, and I'm going to tell you this, and this is not to scare anybody away. So I gave convalescent plasma as soon as I was able to. Mm-hmm. And then I was asked to come back again because the studies show that there could still be antibodies in my plasma. And I said, okay, well, if they're not, are you testing for it? Yes, we are. If there aren't enough, can you still use the plasma? And absolutely. And anybody who knows about plasma, it's important. There are a lot of people who need plasma, especially people on chemo and cancer patients and others who just absolutely require plasma. It's kind of a gift of life for them. And I gave it again on Saturday and it kicked my butt. I mean, I felt terrible. And I think what happened was I got dehydrated because they take, when they're done, the plasma that you give is in a bag like this big.
Wow.
It's like a saline bag. Like if you've been in the hospital, like this wide and that thick. And it's a lot of liquid they take out of you. So I think that's what happened. I got dehydrated and I've been dehydrated once before. I went on a bike tour and got dehydrated. Mm. And if dehydration will kick your butt.
Yeah, that's a bad thing.
It really feels awful. So I think that's what happened. I feel good today, but.
But so glad that you are both feeling so much better.
Thank you. Yeah, and, we are too.
And that your mental state too. That's pretty.
No, I feel great. I think Christy bounced back strong. She's having to go to work every day. I'm not, you know, working except when I want to, I guess is a way to put it. So, I feel a lot better. Here's what I would say about it. And I've thought a lot about this. I'm on the condominium board for the building we live in here in Dallas, Texas. It's all probabilities. It's not one person's more likely to get it than another. Though I think if you stayed locked down in a house and you never went out, your likelihood of staying healthy would be good. So all you can do is do all the things you know to do. Avoid taking risks. And know that everything we do in life comes with risks. And I'm not diminishing this by any matter of means, but I got very like pragmatic, practical about it. And just it's just about numbers. It's about the more things you do that expose you to others, make your risk go up.
Yeah.
And the less you do, the better. The other thing is don't think that your group of friends is safe. Oh, well, I know my friends, they're careful. You don't know, because the irony of us getting sick is that we were probably two of the most careful people that anybody in our circle said, it's shocking that you guys got sick because you guys are like the best at it. And, you know, being prepared, washing, we were wearing masks in March. And so just know that if you're around people who are taking chances and you're taking chances, all of your probabilities go up.
Yeah.
Well, so that's what you do to protect yourself and people you love.
Right. That's a good point that you made. I just want to share one comment with you before we move on to talk about the Red Cross. One of our guests, Kathy, says, when you talked about the sense of renewal after surviving COVID-19, it reminds her of when she survived ovarian cancer and she came away with this fierce sense of urgency of now, you know, now is important.
That's interesting. Yeah. I hadn't really thought about it. Maybe it just caused me to be more focused on things that I knew I wanted and needed to do.
Yeah. Good points. So talk to me about how you got involved in the Red Cross and what part of their mission, because they do a lot of things.
A lot of things.
Right? They do blood drives and they go to disaster places and they provide food. And so they do a lot of things. What part of their mission really appealed to you?
you know, I don't think I knew until I got in there. I knew what the Red Cross did growing up in Miami, as you referenced. You know, hurricanes were a part of life. I'm fascinated by weather. You know, it's funny, you don't want to say, oh, I love hurricanes, because nobody really loves a hurricane. But, you know, weather meteorologists are fascinated and, you know, intellectually about hurricanes. And one of the things I knew is the way the Red Cross responded to natural disasters. And I have to say, I probably always had an interest in that. You know, I'm not a survivalist. I don't have all, you know, I've got some standby food, but I don't have a year's worth. I'm not a prepper. But but there's something fascinating about that. There's something really interesting about how the world deals with those kind of challenges. So I've always been interested in it. I had been working in the radio business. I stepped away from the day-to-day of that. I was involved in a technology firm that was radio centric, and it did not have the energy or the engagement with my fellow teammates that I had enjoyed in radio. One thing about radio stations, at least for my tenure in the business, is that there were incredible places of energy and interesting people. And, you know, anybody that's a, if you will, an old timer in the radio business will tell you that what they really love about it is that sense of energy. I would equate it to, they talk about people who like to gamble. Mm-hmm. It isn't the winning, it's the game. And that's kind of what radio is like. It's the energy. And I miss that. And I also felt like when you're working in radio, your stations are often and are doing a lot of things to support the community. And I miss that because there's a sense of value, personal value that comes out of knowing that you've done something to help your fellow man. So that was always really important to me. And, you know, I like to think that I was, and I can tell you without question, I am a humanitarian. I care about my fellow human beings. And so Red Cross gave me that chance, and I was kind of bored, actually. I need something more to do, be engaged in. I thought, well, I'll be on a disaster action team. Those are the folks that go out in the middle of the night to a house fire, an apartment fire, some local disaster, and they're there to render aid to the people who are affected by that disaster. And I said, well, I can do that. I can get up in the middle of the night. I can go. And that would be interesting. And then the person who ran public affairs found out that I was coming to interview for one of those jobs and said, oh, no, 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 no. You know, he needs to be in our public affairs team. This is a guy that came from radio. I've been in Dallas-Fort Worth radio since 1981. And, you know, was very active in the broadcast community here. So that's really what got me started. I knew about the Red Cross and I was interested in their mission and I was bored. Put the two together, there you go. We got a game on.
And it makes sense they would draft you into public affairs because you are such a good speaker. And great radio voice. So recently, just recovered from COVID, it's a pandemic, and they had this big hurricane that came through Louisiana. So recently, you were there on the ground. We have a video. Should we show the video before you tell us more about it?
That'd be great.
Hi, I'm Dan Halliburton with the American Red Cross in DeRidder, Louisiana, one of the sites that was hard hit by Hurricane Laura. It started down on the Gulf Coast. It came through Lake Charles and right up north through here. Electricity is out everywhere, and that's a real problem. You can't refrigerate your food. You can't cook your food. People need food, and that's what this partnership is all about. We're the site of the Southern Baptist Disaster Relief Organization Emergency Kitchen. Under these tents, they can fix thousands of meals. The Red Cross buys the food, they prepare it, and then we get it out to the people all around southwestern Louisiana that need it most. If you need help, call 1-800-RED-CROSS. Please help by making a donation to redcross.org.
And as they say, shot on iPhone.
Was it shot on your iPhone?
That was all shot on my iPhone and edited on my iPhone. And so, sometimes I've got all kinds of gear, but sometimes you just have to move quickly on something. And so the iPhone that was shot in 4K, I'm pretty sure that was shot in 4K, and but edited and mastered at 1080. So
let me tell the audience that you have been kind of my geek squad, giving me advice about lighting.
I am a geek.
So excuse him for talking about his iPhone video.
Yeah. But I think that it's just cool that the technology that we have in our pockets and our hands and our purses are so amazing. I saw a funny TikTok. So we always think about time travel and what would happen if you went back in time and you brought the people of the past some amazing technology. Well, this one was really funny because it was somebody from 2020 going back to 1990.
Oh my gosh.
We didn't have any of this. There was no streaming. There was no internet.
There was
iPhones. And it was funny. It just this short little comedy bit on TikTok explaining, well, it's really cool. Now you have this phone in your pocket. Well, why? I got a phone in my house.
You're right.
Don't you have a phone at your house? It just went back and forth with the comparisons. And finally at the end it says, what do you think of 2020? He said, you won't like it. That was the end of the bit.
Yeah, 2020 is not the year you want to come back to.
No.
Yeah. So you got to Louisiana. It's a pandemic. So many houses destroyed. How does the Red Cross deal with trying to find housing and get food to these people? Finding the people? How does that work?
Well, it's really challenging. The nature of the hurricane in that part of Louisiana, while there were certainly houses that were impacted by the storm, the big problem was the electrical grid. By the time the winds got there, they weren't sustained and long enough to cause the kind of damage that you'll see with hurricanes, especially in Florida, where you got high category, lots of wind, and just relentless, and it just sits there and churns and tears things up. So you lost a lot of big trees. If a big tree hits your house, that's a problem, but mostly it was a power issue. And I had never seen that kind of devastation to an electrical grid. I don't know what it was that made that storm unique compared to my other experiences. But so the big challenge then is, you know, people, especially if you're a little further inland, like where DeRidder is, or even Lake Charles, which is 35 miles from the coast, you say, oh yeah, I live in hurricane country, but how bad would it be? Or how long would it take? Well, it took a long time because I was there a week and there were still long lines at fast food places to get food because people didn't have any power. Walmart was open, but unless you had a generator or a barbecue grill, which if you're if you're any kind of a Louisianian, you have a barbecue grill, right? So, you know, yeah, you could do some barbecue work, but then you got to keep the food cold. And ice is like an incredible premium during a disaster. So you really need the kind of meals that are shelf ready or somebody to prepare a meal, and that's what you saw there. The Southern Baptist Disaster Relief Organization have these mobile kitchens that they can put on the road and deliver in a matter of a couple of 3 days to any location, and they can fix that. That day, that kitchen was going to, well, another kitchen I saw was going to do 6,000 meals in a day.
Oh, my gosh.
Hot meals. I mean, with protein, with vegetables, with a little snack, with some bread. You know, it's probably not the it's not the most elegant meal you've ever eaten, but it's hearty and it's, you know, meant to kind of keep you going during that. I was at Hurricane Sandy, and at Aqueduct there was a kitchen. They were producing out of that kitchen 16,000 meals a day.
Wow.
16,000. Can you imagine what that's like?
No.
So yeah, that's the partnership that goes on during disasters, the Red Cross working with, you know, play people like the Salvation Army and the Southern Baptists and, you know, so many, I mean, it's hard to name. And then the cities and the states and the federal government, there's just a lot of people that come to work on that. That's the good thing. The hard thing is if you're impacted by a disaster, it just takes a while to sew that quilt, if you will, that patchwork quilt of support that is there. It takes a little while to stand it up, and that's why people need to be prepared for a disaster.
So, you know, all of these people that lost homes and your team that went down there, I mean, where do they stay? You know, we've got all this social distancing now.
And that's really a challenge. So the strange news of COVID-19 is that it means that you don't want to put people together, unless you have to, in a congregate or a group shelter. COVID-19 also hammered travel. So there are lots and lots and lots of empty hotel rooms. So the one caused two problems, but one of the solutions is that through state and federal money, they were able to put people into hotels. But if you can't put them in a hotel that doesn't have power.
Well, yeah, I was going to ask.
So today there are evacuees from Louisiana in the Dallas-Fort Worth. There are 7,000 evacuees living in Dallas-Fort Worth right now, Staying in hotel rooms. And in that case, because there isn't a disaster here, food is easy to come by. So you're staying at a hotel that has a place for you to eat, restaurant. You know, if you got here, you almost certainly have your car. And the most people who came did left early enough that they brought their cars. By the way, if somebody tells you to get out, listen and get out. Yeah. Because what happens is that people wait. They might survive a storm for their home, and it might or might not be livable. But likelihood is your car gets destroyed and now you have no transportation.
Now you can't get out. I was going to ask you, so how do they even get to where you're preparing food?
Well, you plan ahead. And the good news is about hurricane forecasting, at least hurricanes, we have a sense of when they're coming. We have much less of a sense when it comes to tornadoes and almost no sense at all when it comes to earthquakes.
Yeah. But if their cars were destroyed, how did they get to where you're giving out food?
Well, they would bus. They would bus people. And that certainly would happen in Hurricane Harvey. So Hurricane Harvey hits, massive flooding in Houston area. People's cars are flooded unless they had evacuated. Places were flooded that had never flooded before. I mean, you know, biblical flooding in that situation. And they got nothing. They got no house. They got no car. So the various agencies that are involved in that would then bus people. And at that point, we had, I don't want to say an equal number to that, but they were all in shelters. So they're in the Dallas County Convention Center. They're in parks and recreation centers all around the area. Something that would be doable, but not ideal and not something that we want to do. I don't want to say a congregate shelter is the shelter of last resort, but we kind of see it as job one is to get people into individual kind of situations. But what do you do when you have a wildfire in California where you have entire towns that are evacuated? Mm-hmm. They've got to go somewhere. So I haven't seen the shelter count numbers today yet for California, but it would be significant. And people are self-reliant. They'll go to friends' homes or people who have family, that sort of thing. Some people have insurance and they have resources and they may drive a long way to find a hotel or a motel. And then the government agencies, state agencies will work together to get that done. And that's where they call on the Red Cross, because one of the things that probably people think about us first and foremost is our support of people in sheltering and then the feeding operation that goes with that.
I know a lot of people in this community are very generous, and, you know, seeing the devastation in Louisiana, and then of course seeing all of this devastation in California, is there a way that you can donate to the Red Cross and say, I want this to go to California's disaster, I want to go to Louisiana disaster? Is there a way to do that?
Yeah, there is. So here's what I always tell everybody. First of all, the fact that you're making a donation is the most effective, efficient, and quickest way to get help to people. Because these operations on the part of the Red Cross and the other charities that are out there cost massive amounts of money. And not all of that money is going to come from FEMA or other organizations. They come from the people who have donated to the Red Cross. So in a case of like Hurricane Laura, you could certainly make a donation. You can go to redcross.org. You can put it, you know, designate it is the words that we use. Designate it for Laura. You could designate it for California wildfires. I don't know if there's an Oregon or Washington designation yet. Kind of depends on the timing and the amount, the size of the event. So yes, you can do that.
Okay.
Here's what Here's what I like to encourage people to do. Make it to the General Disaster Relief Fund of the American Red Cross, and you'll help everybody. And you'll also help that individual, that community, that state, that city who will be impacted by the next storm that's coming in or the next disaster that hits. Because if you tell us that goes to Laura, it goes to Laura. That money stays there. When the money came in for the deadly tornadoes that have hit Moore, Oklahoma many times, but I was in the one that was so devastating that we lost an elementary school and school children were killed. And that money stayed for a long time because the community then designates. So if we get our relief job done and we've got money left over, and we did at Hurricane and Moore tornado, the community came back and said, you know what we'd like to do? We'd like to build some tornado shelters in our schools, and the school board didn't have the money to do that. So some of that money went there. So that's an example of how if you designate, it stays in the area, but there's just always another one coming. So that's why I like for people just to do the general donation. And the other thing while we're talking about that is please don't ever thank you for your generosity, but don't bring stuff.
Right.
Because when you bring stuff to disaster, it's already a disaster. It's already a massive, chaotic infrastructure that has to go on. And if you load up the back of your SUV with clothes, though somebody might need some clothes, what happens is that somebody's then got to keep care of that. Somebody's got to sort it. And what we've really done now because of COVID-19, we just won't take it now. Before we would take it. And it created challenges, a lot of challenges. But now we can't even take it at all because of COVID-19, because we can't verify its cleanliness. And we certainly don't have the resources to go clean it.
Right. So yeah.
Even water, people, I know, here's what happens. When you see that on television, and you know there's nothing you can do about it, but you want to do something, you know, and it's maybe close by. You say, well, if I loaded up the car and I went and did this, then that's a challenge. Now, if you have a special skill, I met a guy at a tornado here in Texas, and he was not able to really get around that well, but he... You know, he couldn't walk. I walked into him. He had a sign on the side of his van. And I said, well, what do you do? And he said, I sharpen chainsaws. He says, if this had happened before when I was able to get around, I would have been out there clearing trees and helping people clear the limbs out of, you know, cutting big trees down and limbs up and that kind of thing. But I can't do that anymore. So now what I can do is I can sharpen saws.
And I can,
wow, That's awesome. You know, so for free, he's out there sharpening up chainsaws. And anybody knows anything about chainsaws, not that I know a lot, except they really need to be sharp, because if they're not sharp, they can be dangerous to you, right? Yeah. Because they might kick back, and there's other problems with a dull chainsaw. Plus, it just would go slow. So that, I just thought, it's amazing what people will do to help one another during a disaster. Sometimes they'll help other people before they even help themselves.
Yeah, yeah. I wanted to show the video you have from the Paradise Fire. We've talked a lot about the hurricanes, but the fires are certainly going on. So yes, I'd like to show that, because this is a very moving story.
I left my house about 9:30 in the morning, and I tried to get to his place, but of course they wouldn't let me, because you have to follow the road directors and they tell you where to go. So but at that point, there's fire all around you, and the trees are, embers are falling, and I don't know where I'm going because it's in the morning, but it's dark. So I ended up way, way out of town. And I'm not I don't drive a lot, and I don't like to drive, but here I am, and I had to. So I just went where the car took me.
The emptiness that you feel, not knowing what you're leaving behind, you know it's gone.
And when we walked through these doors and everybody just congregated on us, can we help you? What do you need? What can we do for you? It was heart-wrenching for me, because I never thought I would laugh or smile again. And the outpouring of love that just comes from everybody here. It was wonderful. It is wonderful. They would sit with you, and they hold your hand, and they just let you talk and get it out. And that's what helped me the most. And they just, they'd hug you and
so that there's a lot of people going through that now.
Yes,
in California and Oregon. And what do you hear from there, and how do they deal with that right now?
Well, it's hard. My videos make me cry. I never make videos with the idea that I want to make somebody cry. I really don't. And I cry really easy. I cry at stop signs. I cry easy. And when I every time I hear that, and it's one of my favorite videos. I did that with another co-creator, Michael Delpierre, in New York City. We were assigned out there. And those two were just so delightful and so real, and her emotions, they, just to add to that story, they were in different places when the fire hit Paradise. And if you go look at a map, Paradise is at the top of three roads that go up to up the mountain, and then they stop. And there's one little crossroad that goes across. There's only three ways off that mountain, just three. And they had gone to different areas when the evacuation began and the fire hit. And it was like a freight train, is what people say, in both the sound of it and the speed of it. And somehow then they got separated, and they didn't have their phones. They didn't know how to get a hold of one another. She ended up in a McDonald's in another town. I don't know which one. And she found a police officer, and she said, I live in Paradise, and I've lost my chip. And he said, well, you need to go to the shelter at the Butte County Fairgrounds. And that's where he went, and they met each other after being separated by the fire at a Red Cross shelter.
Wow.
So that's why that story, and I would love to, if they had told all of them about that story, but you know, people kind of tell the story they want to tell, and then we try to capture it. Well, it just meant a lot. It was funny too, what people think about. So Chip had, he was just really obsessed about getting something out of the trunk of his car. He said, I've got this stuff in the back of my car. I got to get rid of it. And he was so obsessed, but he acted kind of secret about it. Well, what is in the back of your car, Chip? You know? And so he said, well, I said, let me go look. He said, I'm trying to get people to help me throw this stuff out of the back of my trunk, and I can't, because we got to get all our stuff, because she had some things and he had some things, and they had two cars, and they had to do all the logistics with family. And so I went in and looked at the car. It was just junk. It was an 8-track player and a bunch of old crazy stuff. And I said, he said, I was going to the dump. I was on my way to the dump with his stuff to get rid of it the day of the fire. I said, yeah. Okay. So we drove his car around. Well, he did. I said, okay, I'll meet you over at this dumpster, and then we'll throw all that away. And we found a dumpster. That made his day. That was like the most important thing to him at that point in time, was I've got to get the junk out of my car. So there's just these little things you can do to help people that don't seem like they mean much, but to him, it meant the world. So
I mean, I think it's obvious that this has had a huge impact on you being there. Can you expound on that a little bit? Like, how has this changed your life? What has been the impact of being the Red Cross volunteer?
I liked myself fine, but I really like myself when I help people. I mean, I think we all like ourselves, kind of, mostly, hopefully do. Right. But when you know you help somebody, you feel really good about yourself. It's just a really wonderful feeling. And like I said, those little tiny things like helping Chip get the stuff out of the back of his car, or maybe something bigger than that. I saw other people. I walked in behind, man, I wish I had a camera, behind two women, and they were talking, and they say he's here. And I followed off behind them. And I said, well, have you talked to him? And there was back and forth. They were walking ahead of me. I couldn't hear all the story. And I watched them find their father at a Red Cross shelter. Several days after that, we drove up the mountain to Paradise. And I had never seen anything quite like it. I'd seen another wildfire that impacted a neighborhood, and that was pretty shocking, but there was something different about this kind of a mountain community, and little houses and things kind of scattered in the giant pine trees, which, by the way, most of those big ones survive. You know, it's a fast moving fire, and some will die, but a lot of the really big trees stay intact. The little stuff is gone. Houses are gone. Cars melt. The wheels of cars melt down and will run down a concrete driveway and little rivulets of metal, and then collect in a flat piece of slag at the bottom of the driveway. Engine blocks will melt from the heat of the fire. And I've seen that, you know, the wheels, the mag wheels, like somebody who have aluminum mag wheels on a car, will melt and just turn into strange, you know, bizarre sculptures of aluminum. But so seeing all that and seeing how people survive and just being a little part, and I mean just a little part, I'm just a team member. I'm not a first responder. I'm not pulling people out of houses that are on fire. God bless those men and women who do that. I come after the place is frankly safe. They won't send us into a dangerous situation. But once a place is safe, then we can help. And that's why we help so many people who evacuate, because they go away from the danger. Mm-hmm. The really brave people are in the middle of that danger. So being part of that team, there isn't really a much better feeling, because you're seeing what you do and seeing the good that it brings face to face. people saying thank you. And also some people being really mad at you.
Why would they be mad at you?
Because something isn't, because their lives have been turned upside down.
Oh, so they're
they
just.
They may have lost everything.
Yeah, so they're just mad, upset.
And they're just mad and they're angry and they're frustrated and they're living in a shelter. And I just remember there was a time in Miami, Florida after Irma, and a woman was in a shelter and she brought me outside. She was a very educated woman and she was a very angry woman. And she read me the riot act. And I don't know why me, I didn't do anything wrong, but the Red Cross was running the shelter. She wasn't happy. It's not a, you know, nobody wants to be there. We make it the best we can make it. You know, we find little interesting ways to make it go a little better. We celebrate people's birthdays and have birthday parties and, you know, celebrate with ice cream and little things. Because the people who run those shelters really are dedicated.
Yeah.
They're volunteers. They do everything to the best of their ability. Sometimes they don't do it right. Sometimes people mess up. It's a disaster.
It's a disaster.
It's
right?
a disaster. And so I've been dressed down, got an earful. One of the things that when you do public affairs, one, we wear this nice black vest with logos on it, and it looks really good. It's made to look good on camera, right? But it also makes you look kind of like you're the boss, which you're not. And you're standing there with nothing to do. And sometimes you have a clipboard because in the clipboard, you have the photo releases that you need. So you stand around with a black vest on with logos and a clipboard. Somebody will think you're the boss. And they say, including Red Cross people, I walk up and say, well, so we've got this issue over here. We were thinking that we'd like to move this stuff from this point to that point. And you're going, whoa, whoa, whoa. I'm not the boss. I'm just public affairs. I take pictures. I make light of it because it's fun in an odd way to say that, you know, the sense of working together is something that makes human beings feel good about one another to accomplish something, whether it's a football team or a soccer or a badminton, you know, or a Red Cross team,
or all teams, whatever. Yeah.
So it makes you feel good about yourself to be part of that team. I always tell people it's an honor to be part of it.
And it's an honor to have you here. You've been a great guest. I always ask my guests if there's one or two takeaways they'd like to leave for the Hey Boomer audience. I know you've given a couple of advice, but is there a couple of things you'd like to leave us with?
Yeah. Well, let me do the Red Cross stuff first, and then I'll do some personal stuff. So on the Red Cross side, there are two things Red Cross needs right now. The first thing we really need are volunteers. Because of COVID-19, there are a lot of people who can't or won't be able to go out and be face-to-face and help people. That means people that are in a community probably near you. So, and even if you're not near the disaster, the fact that you might go in and learn to be a volunteer, and we do vet all of our volunteers and there's a lot of training, and we'll work with you for the amount of hours that you have available. You know, you don't have to do this like full time. I was gone in 2017 to hurricanes for 89 days of deployment. So no, we're not asking that of you, but any little bit helps. And if you can volunteer in your town, that means somebody there can go because they have the training to help. So volunteer. We need volunteers and we need support. This will be one of the most disaster prone years for so many reasons, but as it relates to natural disasters that we've seen in a long time, you've heard the comments about California and the historic levels that are happening there. And we've got five more tropical disturbances or, you know, investigation areas that are lined up out in the Atlantic that are going to come this way too. So volunteer, make a donation, go to 1-800, call 1-800-RED-CROSS or go to redcross.org and find out more. That's where you can volunteer and you can give money. So let me tell you about the personal thing, since this is all about boomers. You know, I kind of walked away from an everyday job but I didn't walk away from being active and engaged. And I say to my friends that if you're not getting involved in volunteerism, if you're not doing something to help out humanity, not only is humanity missing out on you, but you're missing out on something good in you. So go find that. Go follow your heart. It doesn't have to be the Red Cross. If it's homelessness, it's if it's working in a senior center, you know, the list could go on and on. But if you'll go out, if you'll get engaged, if you'll do something to help somebody who needs a little help from you, you will be rewarded immensely in return. If I was better at the Bible, I'd have some great line, but I don't have any of those good Bible lines.
I love that you said that, because that's really so much of what this Hey Boomer community is about. It's about being engaged and involved and making a difference in this next stage of your life. So that's awesome.
And it makes the week go very quickly.
It does. Let me tell you about our guest for next week. She also has a big heart for helping. Her name is Kathy McAfee, and Kathy is known as America's marketing motivator. And she's going to talk to our Boomer community about branding yourself in this next act of your life, right? So most of us think about branding when we're still working, but it's really such an exercise in self-exploration and self-confidence as you start to think through all that you are and all that you still have to give. So I think it's going to be a fascinating conversation. I'm really excited about that. I just wanted to remind people about the 3-day community gathering that we're offering, and that is going to be on reducing your anxiety and increasing your sense of well-being and happiness, and getting involved is one of those tools for doing that. So you can email me for more information about that, and you can also email if you'd like to get on our mailing list. I send out a Monday reminder of our upcoming shows and something about my blog sometimes. So I always like to end by reminding us that C.S. Lewis said, "You are never too old to dream another dream or set another goal." I am so grateful for all of you that joined us today. I am so grateful for you, Dan, and that you and Christy are feeling better, and for all that you do for the community. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's an honor. And I'll watch that show next week. That sounds like a good show.
It's going to be a great show. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. My name is Wendy Green, and this has been Hey Boomer.